While we spend a lot of our lives, especially our younger lives, paying little attention to the day we will die, today, Ash Wednesday, puts our birth and our death side by side. To use an image from Nadia Boltz-Weber, it's as if our lives were splayed out on a ribbon or a string, and days like today are when God pinches time and pulls down on that ribbon, placing our birth and our death in the same view. I've learned a lot about Ash Wednesday in the last few weeks preparing for this sermon, as I wasn't raised in this tradition. So on the long drive home from Portland the other week, I had my wife read to me from the Ash Wednesday Wikipedia site. I was trying to wrap my head around why we put ourselves through Lent. Why we receive ashes today, why we sort of pretend like we're going through something or don't have something, giving up alcohol or chocolate or Facebook, when we're actually just voluntarily depriving ourselves of something we could just reach out and get. Why go shoot through these charades? But then I thought, why not? Why not try on a period of solemnity as a spiritual practice? Why not receive ashes and add a new dimension to my life? Or try new practices through Lent? What do I have to lose? Sure, I could do these things, as I have done before. But the passages we read today make it clear that God is hoping for more. This passage in Matthew comes in the middle of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Just after Jesus gives a bunch of, "You have heard it said, but I tell you," radically disrupting these early disciples' views of adultery, anger, divorce, oaths, retaliation, and love of enemies, and so on. In every case, Jesus affirms the practice that has been, but disrupts the comfort of this familiar practice with a challenge. And in each case, this challenge takes them to the edge of their comfort. So when we get to our passage in chapter 6, Jesus only continues to disrupt the disciples' view of spiritual practices and sacrifices by telling them to not just do the practices, but to do them outside of anyone's gaze, for God's sake, for the sake of their relationship with God. We see this then again later in the Isaiah passage we read, where we find God announcing that the gestures of sackcloth and ashes, of fasting with the hope of gaining God's approving eye, was not what God was after. Shocking. This passage sounds like another, "You have heard it said, but I tell you." And it sounds like God is saying to stop fasting and to go instead and give to the poor, loose the bonds of the oppressed, and let the injustice, and let the oppressed go free. While this is all true, and of course is part of what it means to be a Christian, I think we still miss the point if we simply look to do good without stopping to look for God. So in just a bit, we're going to sing Psalm 51. There are a few lines in that passage I think are worth reflecting on before we get there. The passage ends like this: "For you have no delight in sacrifice. If I were to give a burnt offering, you would not be pleased. The sacrifice acceptable to God is a broken spirit. A broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise." I think that's where the image of this ribbon comes in handy again. When we see our birth and our death together, what lies between is small. Our actions and our possessions, even smaller. God is showing us what matters, and it's the state of our heart. This is hard work, and it takes a lot of work. And it's vulnerable because we see how fragile we are. But when our birth and our death are before us, and we can remember that we are dust, we can laugh at all this and hold loosely to the things we have, making our hearts free. In her book, Holy the Firm, Annie Dillard wrote this. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? Or who shall stand in God's holy place? There is no one but us. There is no one to send, nor a clean hand, nor a pure heart on the face of the earth, nor in the earth, but only us. A generation comforting ourselves with the notion that we have come at an awkward time, that our innocent fathers are all dead, as if innocence had ever been, and our children busy and troubled, and we ourselves unfit, not yet ready, having each of us chosen wrongly, made a false start, failed, yielded to impulse, unable to see the thread, exhausted, weak, and involved. But there is no one but us. There never has been. I read you this because it's good. And it's true. But I read it today specifically because today is a day when we tell the truth. We are, all of us, mortal, weak, and involved. But instead of weighing ourselves down in our sin and our weakness, tangled into the superficial ways we often live these lives, we may instead choose to reconcile ourselves to God. In order to do this, we must live with broken hearts, collecting for ourselves what is inward, building an inward life that grows towards God and is given for others. This is what it means to build our treasure in heaven. And in all of this, God is telling us where God can be found. God stands in front of us and thunders out like the prophet Isaiah, "Here I am. Here's how to find me. Here's where I exist in relationship. You will find God in your heart, in the quiet places when your life and your heart are light and you simply give. Sacrifice, giving money, church going, ashes, Eucharist. These motions are empty if our hearts are not broken and in search of relationship with God." In a few minutes, we're going to have the chance to come forward and receive ashes. We'll get out of these pews and walk to the front, demonstrating our great fragility and need of relationship with God. Who will ascend into the hills of the Lord? I will. And you? Come forward today and receive ashes. Fast. Give something up for Lent. Give alms. But also remember that God hopes for more. Let these motions be windows to all this more, to a contrite heart and a life spent in relationship with God.